man. This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whitening. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Can you please come in?
Point of order.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to another edition of Sunday Times Politics Weekly with me, Amil Amrao. I'm joined in the studio this week by my comrades, Kwanita Hunter, Apiwe de Klerk, Zimasa Matiwane, and Zingisa Mvumvu. We've got a full studio today. There's actually no chairs. Zingisa is standing up behind me. He has nowhere to sit for the next 45 minutes, unfortunately.
Yeah, he must stand.
But guys, listen, we've got a big week ahead. We're all going to be super busy. I'm sure we've lined up. Zingisa, I know you're going to see the EFF tomorrow for their May Day rally. We've got a colleague in Durban who's going to see Cyril when he talks to Kusatu at their May Day rally. We're going to be busy at the Siyanyoba rally this weekend, Kwanita, aren't we?
There's the DA rally,
the EFF.
What is the EFF's rally called?
Selatu. And then the DA one is what, Ganji?
That's your machine, that one.
What is that name?
Ba something.
Ba something.
Google it, man.
Oh my God.
I forgot it.
Okay, this doesn't say anything about the DA's marketing strategy. But let's start off with a story in our paper this past weekend by Kwanita. Thabo Mbeki finally coming out of the woodworks to electioneer or campaign for the ANC, saying that he's calling for the ANC to act on allegations of corruption against its Secretary General, Ace Magashule. He said that it could not act as if the claims did not exist. And Kwanita, you interviewed Thabo Mbeki. What struck you most about your conversation with him?
So, interviewing Thabo Mbeki is a very interesting thing. Obviously, as a young reporter, you're a bit enamored by the man, firstly. But secondly, it takes him a long time to get to the point that he's making. And the interview was quite fascinating in that he spoke about, 25 years of democracy. He spoke about things like, what I tried to push him, on was the 9 wasted years, and whether he thought it was the 9 wasted years, the Zuma years, and he says he didn't believe it was all 9 wasted years. But I think that the point that he was making in this elections, and I mean, you would recall, he made a very similar point about the ANC Integrity Commission at the Rand Easter show when he appeared there, is that he's saying, my support for the ANC is kind of conditional because I'm only supporting you because you said renewal.
Yes.
And renewal means listening to the ANC Integrity Commission that's saying remove 22 of your senior leaders from your list to parliament. Mm. And so that was very similar, I thought, to what Khalima Mulhante then subsequently said. But the interview really goes into the heart of it, where he says that, I asked him a very direct question. I said, Mr. President, are you uncomfortable that the Secretary General of the ANC is facing these type of charges? And he says, yes. And he says, the ANC cannot act as if these claims do not exist. What was fascinating is the response of Ace Magashule after we had put it to him that the former president had said this, was he said, everyone in the ANC, all top 6 members of the ANC are dealing with accusations of corruption. He says, from the president all the way to the TG, from Busasa to PIC. That's his words. Mm. And I know we tweeted it on Saturday night and we said, Ace Magashule says all ANC leaders have small Indiana skeletons. But for me, that was quite fascinating to see the comeback, and I think it's going to determine a lot of what happens post-elections, to say, no, you can't discriminate against me as Nomvula Mokonyane. Praveen, you have charges too. You can't arrest me, Ace Magashule would say. Mr. President, you need to be arrested for Busasa. Mm. So that kind of narrative, I think, is the biggest takeaway from this article of Mbeki. Obviously, the former president, opining about the state of the economy and what needs to happen post-election, that's all important. Mm. But I do think that it created a space for or gave us a glimpse of what the conversation will be post-elections when the stakes are not that high, because the ANC would or wouldn't have, achieved what it did in the elections.
Now, I want, Zimosa, maybe you and Zingisa can jump in here. Kgalema Moshlante and Thabo Mbeki haven't really campaigned for the ANC since their presidencies had come to an end. And we've also seen other leaders, party leaders like Tony Leo are now coming out of the woodwork for the DA as well, the PUA. What does it mean, Zimosa or Zingisa, for now seeing Thabo Mbeki and these ANC elders coming out in support of the ANC?
For the ANC, I'm not sure if it has any deeper meaning, but I feel like they are only coming out now because they approve of Cyril, and they did not approve of Zuma. Whereas in the DA, it kind of tells me that Tony Leon and Helen Zille coming out to campaign, perhaps it's my own personal feelings or understanding of it, but I feel like they are seeing some sort of lack in the DA campaigning, and perhaps they are trying to help them. So I think between Thabo Mbeki, for example, and Tony Leon, I think the motives or the objectives of them coming out to campaign are totally different.
Well, I think to a certain degree I agree with Zimosa. With regards, let me start with the DA and what I think with Tony Leo and Helen Zille. I think in the DA there's a general feeling that Musa Maimane is not doing that well in steering the party forward. Would remember that Tony Leon left the party at 10%, Helen Zille took it to 20%. So those are, you know, increases to 100% and more. And I would think that is what is expected of Musa Maimane, but I highly doubt that the DA would get anything less, more than 30%. And also, now with this new dispensation of the ANC, the new dawn of President Cyril Ramaphosa, there's a bit of a challenge because the DA in the past 5 years or so invested a lot on the persona that was former President Jacob Zuma instead of what they offer or what where the ANC is failing. And I think by now, it's too late because with the current president of the ANC, it's very difficult to come up with something that sticks. They tried with Bosasa, but really that hasn't gotten them anywhere. And I think they realize that they are failing. Hence, they thought they should bring back those ones. With regards to former President Big and former President Mukande coming out, it's more or less as simple as Zimosa put it, that it was a matter of they didn't approve with the leadership of former President Zuma. Well, in part, I believe the part that we're leaving out is that with former President Peggy, it also has an element of sour grace for the loss in Polokwane, with former President Mukland. And then, of course, it goes to issues of morals and principles, but that personal gripe cannot be ignored because ever since he lost there, it was never the same again.
You know, with the Musi Maimane, we have been accustomed to when you see Musi on TV, you kind of expect someone who's going to say Zuma this, ANC this. You are not anticipating someone who is going to sell the DA to you. And I think Tony Leon and Helen Zille coming out are hoping to give us an alternative to the traditional message of the DA, which is always anti-ANC and no alternative.
Apure, is the Helen Zille and Tony Leon coming out, is that an attempt to go back to the original DA voter? Your conservative white upper middle class, is that it?
Hey, I don't know what informs the move with Tony Leon per se, but I've always understood Helen Zille to be a crowd puller everywhere she goes. Whether her coming out would then please those conservative voters, it may be, but I always understood that. In fact, she has more flair than the current leader.
She's the Jacob Zuma of the DA.
Yeah.
When she goes out, it doesn't matter if it's a squatter camp or it's a suburb. She always gets that celebrity type.
She even has a closer name, fam.
What is it?
Nonsap.
That's what you call
her. She's always been called Nonsap.
Okay. Guys, this is Sunday Times Politics Weekly. Thank you so much again for joining us. We're going to take a quick ad break, and when we get back, we're going to be talking about the road up to the 2019 elections. It's been, I think we're going to start around 2004, 2005, and we're going to work our way up to all the big political developments into 2019. Join us after the break, guys. It's going to be intense.
Young people are making their mark. Get up! Tune
into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sowetan Live website,
or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yavamdana.
Welcome back. Okay, let's get back into it. So we're heading into the 2019 elections, arguably one of the biggest elections in South Africa's democratic history. We started in 1994 with the democratic dispensation, and we sort of moved on from there with the ANC in almost total control of the country. Then we sort of went into 2005, where the rifts in the ANC started to show at its most at the time, in the battle for the presidency between Thabo Mbeki and Jacob Zuma. I think that's at the point where we all saw, you know, just what's happening inside the ANC. If we go back then, there was that massive battle where Thabo Mbeki sort of started going against Zuma and all the allegations surrounding him. At the time, it was only the arms deal allegations and allegations of, rape allegations. So that's what Zuma was facing ahead of Polokwane, which was in 2007, the ANC's Polokwane conference. And he pushed all the way through that. I mean, Zuma came out as a charismatic leader, charmed a lot of people in the ANC, and grew his constituency from the inside as deputy president after before Thabo fired him then. But what did that mean? Where did that place the ANC at that time?
Can I just jump in here?
Yeah.
So I had, the conversation with Mbeki was obviously quite fascinating. So I pushed him and I said, why did you contest for a third term? It's something everyone wanted to know. Because Polokwane is probably the biggest game changer in post-apartheid politics. Mm. Or maybe we're overestimating it. I don't know.
I think it
changed the course of both opposition and governing party politics. And so he said something which I hadn't heard him say before, where he says he had foreseen this rot that we see in the state capture commissions and all these other commissions. And he says there was something that was characterized from 1997, where former President Nelson Mandela started talking about this, the corruption of the ANC, the way the ANC is being used for state power and nothing else, and people are joining the movement do not agree or subscribe themselves to the values of the movement, right? But this is something that has been repeated over and over and over and over again over the years. But Mbeki's saying, it may be revisionist, it really may be revisionist, but he says, I went to Polokwane and I said to in my political report, this is what went wrong, this is what's going wrong, this is what's going to happen to the party. I predicted all of this, but I was not allowed, but comrades, and he's referring to Julius Malema and Fikile Mbalula, were sent there to make sure that report was not discussed. And he says that he's been told in retrospect that if that report that was honest and frank about basically Zuma and his cabal at the time, the outcome of the conference would have been different. Now, that for me surprised me. So basically Mbeki's saying, had it not been for Julius and Fikile Mbalula, who came there on a mission to disrupt and not allow my political report to be interrogated and discussed, the results of Polokwane would have been very different.
Yeah, we know how the ANC works. Oh, maybe there would be people who would have been persuaded by his argument, but come, you know how these things work. There's a lobbyist from the region from which his other strong ally, who's this guy, who's famously known to say, but we have numbers in Polokwane.
Peter Manani, Popo.
Peter Manani.
Mluleke George.
Mluleke, from that region. We're talking and whatnot. And he would say, hey, conferences are difficult because now you send two people from your branch agreeing with what they've been deployed for. They get there, they get something nyana, and the next thing, the one votes for this candidate and the other votes for that candidate. So maybe there will be people who have been persuaded, but I don't think so. But I don't think maybe we should dwell much on that.
No, but that's not the point. The point that he's making is that the point that he was making is that he foresaw this. He's basically now saying, I predicted this.
Yeah, well, but you see, just to write on what Dikle was saying, yes, I understand. I mean, I believe him in foreseeing the kind. I mean, you remember that, for instance, Thabo Mbeki was at some point in time very close to Jacob Zuma. So he's one of the people who actually knows Zuma more than any one of us know him. So you know your friend, you know their weaknesses and strengths. And I believe him if he would say that, knowing this guy, I knew that he was going to be bad news for the ANC and probably for the country as well. But that also doesn't excuse him for having filled it himself. Perhaps he should have looked among other comrades within his own slate there. I mean, a person who was running for deputy at the time was Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, who had a very solid track record in government and within the ANC, was respected at the time. Had no even this strange association with Jacob Zuma was not there at all at that time. And I would have believed that was the person that Mbeki's camp would have pushed if they wanted to prevent Zuma at all costs necessary. But pushing himself was a bit selfish as well. And
so you're saying he's as much to blame as the Zuma? So
absolutely. In fact, he is as much to blame for Zuma than anyone else, because had Zuma contested a different person, the results would have gone a different way. I would like to believe so.
I feel like there is a level of narcissism that I refuse to accept coming from the former president, saying I foresaw this, had I been given at that time, this would not have happened. Okay, fine. So he decided to position himself as some sort of a dictator in the ANC and demanding at that time, which is unconstitutional, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine.
No, it's not constitutional in the ANC.
Oh, okay. So at the time
it was not.
Oh, okay, fine. But whatever the case, he is part of what created Zuma to be this invincible.
Tsunami.
That's what it was called.
That's what it was called. Yeah, you're right.
To be this invincible tsunami. And When Zuma emerged as Uthabo, as someone who is a patriot, a former president, and someone who loves the ANC as much as he does, he knew what was going to happen. He foresaw this. But he decided to go back to the shadows because he was bitter about Polokwane instead of trying to make a change inside the ANC.
But can I be the devil's advocate on that point? When the incumbent president, Cyril Ramaphosa, said the reason why I stayed as Zuma's deputy, even though he was doing all of these wrong things, is because I was trying to influence it from the inside, and none of you guys buy that argument. So
okay, let's move on from this, Patrick. As we all know, after Polokwane and after Zuma was elected as ANC president, you had what we then called the Polokwane mourners. So your breakaway groups headed by Terry Lakota and
Shiloh.
And so we had the formation of parties like COPE, was it UDM as well?
UDM was long before.
So we had COPE and we had a few other little parties that broke away from the ANC. I think the first big breakaways from the ANC we saw at that point. And then we got into the Zuma presidency in 2009. And we can discuss that a whole nother time, but I think everybody sort of understands from their own perspectives, and people have different views about what the Zuma presidency looked like. But then was it in 2012 that there was another breakaway from within the ANC in the form of the EFF?
Well, it didn't launch in 2012.
No, it didn't launch, but
it found its feet there.
And it launched in 2013. If I'm not mistaken. Yes, it was EFF was in 2013. And I think that was the biggest blow for the ANC in terms of a mass sort of exodus from their party, and also an exodus which resulted in a successful party forming. We can argue about the numbers from COPE and the other breakaway parties a few years earlier, but the EFF have now become a formidable opponent to the ANC in their rise to their 6% in 2014. But if we look at that, should that not be seen as a very important fixture in our lead up to these elections? Because we had the EFF, I don't think anybody expected it at the time, but now an opposition party which was more like the ANC in a way than we had with the DA. So you're having an almost a scale where you have the DA on a sort of on the sort of right wing, and then the ANC sort of neutral, and now the EFF completely on the left, but actually successfully being able to do that.
But I disagree with you about this DA on the
right. Not the right.
So
not on the right, but
center right.
Center right. I'm not saying all the way down
are
the right.
But
the EFF was not. We can't really say they were a breakaway.
Yeah, they were not a breakaway.
Those guys were just straight chased out of.
And they were hounded out. They were fired.
But that's why you know, I gave a lot of credence to at initially. Maybe now I think a bit differently. To that whole unity talk that Mabuza was perpetuating before in the NASDAQ conference is that the ANC has a history of creating its own enemies, from Inkatha to UDM to COPE to I mean, imagine
from PAC, naturally.
Yeah, from PAC. Yeah.
As we are looking at a picture of Robert Sobukwe in your.
On his abdomen.
How did the EFF change the sort of political landscape when they came to being in 20 when they got their 6% in 2014?
People changed everything.
Yeah.
Go. It's fine.
Look, when the EFF came, before they got to parliament, people underestimated the impact that they would have. But when they got to parliament, this whole term, it has been like they are the official opposition when you have an official opposition, which is the DA. They played their cards very well. They knew when to attack, who to attack. Okay, well, it was JZ, yes, the whole time. But they made the young people interested in politics again. Or for the first time, I don't know. For the first time, even the parliamentary channel became popular on DStv because people wanted to watch those debates. It's not it parliament became vibrant not only at the house sittings, but even in committees. People wanted to watch, and it helped us a lot. So that it then built a base for them to say, look, there were issues that they raised there that were issues of principle. They took so many cases to court. So certain people realized that it's not just the noise that they make, it's not just the swearing, it's not just the fighting. And after that, that's how I believe they managed to do so well and became kingmakers in Gauteng. And to me, that is very important. And the more so, the fact that they didn't become part of the coalition formally. So now, when you have Solim Simanga going to campaign in Tshwane, where he was a mayor, you can say as a member of the community, but you failed here in Tshwane because of this and this and that. You have your own scandals. There's Glad Africa. There was, you see, but the EFF managed to not be involved in that situation, such that when they go to all these informal settlements where they had made promises, they can go there and say, look, these ones that we partnered with our IMS were promising that if you give us a chance, we will come and deliver this and that, and we will manage without being in government too. You see, so they are coming into power disrupted a lot, and it's going to have an effect on the ANC vote in the next week.
Sengisa, just before you carry on, I just want to put this into a bit of context. So when the EFF were formed, this came in the context and around the Inkandla scandal, mm-hmm. that was around that time that broke. There were also the first sort of revelations around state capture in 2013 with the Vatekloof mm-hmm. scandal. So Zuma's presidency was enshrouded in a whole bunch of corruption and mismanagement. Things were sort of falling apart when the EFF came around in 2013. This was the same time when the opposition or the DA started campaigning as well in parliament, just like the EFF did, and the whole Zuma attack started coming around. And I think going into the 2016, the ANC finally saw the results of all that maladministration and that corruption when they suffered widespread defeats in the local government elections.
Yeah, look, correct. I mean, correct. And Lutike couldn't have put it any better. But, you know, even at an ideological, political level, the EFF has changed the game so much. The ANC, for instance, today is in such an identity crisis, and it's in part mostly because of what the EFF is. I mean, because the ANC all these years has pretended to be a socialist party, but they never really had anyone who challenges them. But the EFF came and completely occupied that left space that the ANC was not really in, because the ANC is more or less at the center, not to the left. And then the EFF occupied that space such that at times they forced the ANC to move to the left with the issues of land expropriation without compensation, and most of the ANC policies, as we saw them and how they resolved in Nasrec, that was mainly in part because of the pressures coming from the EFF. So EFF has put this the ANC under so much immense pressure. Today we have fights over the nationalization of the Reserve Bank within the ANC. Others are saying it must go, others it must not go. Those who say it must go, it's mainly to be pushed by the EFF, because the EFF, these socialist policies are mainly popular given our historical background. So you'll never fail in terms of support when you push those socialist policies. So the ANC sort of gets dragged into that position as well. But also in terms of you know, their participation in these metros, they've really done so well, and I think it was a political strategy that has worked for them so far, not to be part of the actual governance in these municipalities, but to push at times for certain things to be done that are in line with their policies. The issues of insourcing of security guards and cleaners, it has happened in Johannesburg, happened in Tshwane, I think in Nelson Mandela Bay as well. It's happening. So although they are not in government, but they can come out and say, look at what we've delivered. Actually, if you give us a fair amount mandate when we're in, we can do more for you. So EFF has been quite a revelation, and everything so far, fortunately for them, has worked for them.
Then let's move on. So in 2014, Zuma starts his second term as South Africa's president, and then a year or two later, with the rise of corruption and state capture, and those revelations coming out, the ANC then suffers its first major losses in the local government elections in 2016, and that resulted in them losing major metros like Johannesburg, like Tshwane as well. And I think there was a moment of realization for the governing party at the time that something is not right here, something must be done. I think that's when the party starts, the first started to realize, okay, Zuma's not really working out. And then I remember in 2017, when the big campaigns then started for Nasrec, and you had Ramaphosa rising on the one side, and you had Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma rising on the other. And Zuma was booed on the May Day rally in 2017, if I remember correctly. Was it in Bloemfontein?
Yes. Where they sang that song that says, we heard the great news, the good news that Zuma is leaving.
Yes. Yeah. And then that was sort of followed by wide-scale protests in 2017 as well, across the entire country, with hundreds of thousands of people sort of rising up against the Zuma administration. And that sort of led to the big campaign road into Nasrec, which was a pivotal moment for where we are now. Of course, we don't have to make this news, but Nasrec was at the point where Zuma was finally defeated as the ANC president by Cyril Ramaphosa and Zuma's candidate, in inverted commas, of course, Zana Dlamini Zuma. And that sort of changed the entire political landscape, not just for the country, but also for the ANC. That decision, how does it impact where we are now?
I think the result of this of the ANC's conference has put has taken away a lot of pressure from the party. In that, at times it's very difficult to, as a party, to always be defending one person. And now, when they are campaigning now, they can sort of run a campaign without having to defend and explain the one person. And for
but
for
this Ace.
But you see, Ace, this thing of Ace is new.
Yeah.
The one of JZ has been there from 2005.
Mm.
So from 2005, people who were in support of him, they were constantly having to defend his faults and his problems first before they can tell you what they can do for you in Eastern Cape, for instance. JZ doesn't live in Eastern Cape. They would have some people who are candidates there to be the premier, MECs and whatnot. So even if those people would have been competent, I'm not saying they are competent because they've got their own problems there.
Yeah.
But even if they were competent people who were going to be able to bring about change and there was always this elephant in the room that, but there's this guy, you see?
But guys, we are such a forgiving nation. So the elephant was chased out at NASREC by ANC branches, and we somehow absolved the ANC of all the collective responsibility.
Absolutely. That they've taken over.
Clap. Before
someone is now on pension, we forgive it all.
We forgive it all.
But you see, the problem is mainly declared. I don't think the ANC is problem on an individual. The ANC is a vicious patronage network, the entire system of the ANC.
I can agree with that.
And for me, as you can change individuals all you want. I mean, someone recently wrote about it, I forgot who is it, and he was lambasted on Twitter for writing that you can have an individual, yes, Mr. Ramaphosa has got an integrity and all that, but how deep the patronage network of the ANC, the manner in which it runs deep, my brother, not even Jesus.
Not in the ANC, in the state.
You know, I'm just starting with the party to say what happened in NASREC doesn't really change the situation.
No,
the ANC, from where I'm standing, it needs a complete overhaul in terms of its moral compass.
Mutante called it a surgical overhaul.
Absolutely. I agree with Mutante that for the ANC to self-correct, it must die and restart again. There is no other way.
Because you know what's going to happen? Every time there is a new crop of leaders, then we're going to have this one elephant. The previous one, we had Zuma. This one, it looks like we're going to have Ace, and we're all going to hate Ace and focus on Ace and forget about
everyone else.
And
then
at the end of this term, then we're going to hear stories actually, it wasn't just Ace, so-and-so also, and so-and-so. So this thing of just ANC is the elephant. All of it is the elephant.
But let me give you an example about how bad this is. And the similar concept of how fickle we can be as South Africans is... Shamila Batoi is going to be this figure from Hardy Boys or something that's going to come with a big hat and a, you know, sheriff gun,
yeah,
and is going to solve, you know, law enforcement problems in South Africa. And, you know, there's this, and I felt like I was fixating on this story this weekend. This tiny story that appeared in the Sunday Times about what's happening at the Hawks. And it's so small and granular and tiny. But for me, it just speaks volumes to the crisis that this country faces. A person is implicated in the State Capture Commission. She is a major general in charge of the country's anti-corruption cases. She is probably the most important police officer in this country at this moment. She is accused by a former deputy finance minister of killing a case against the Gupta brothers, right? She then says no, she's going... She then gets suspended, but she also then says she's going to cross-examine Mr. B.C. Jonas, and by that she means she's going to dispute what he says. She withdraws that, meaning she agrees with what Mr. B.C. Jonas says. She's on suspension. 60 days later, she quietly gets reinstated into her job, and she now, today, works in the office of the Hawks.
Mm. Okay, I think it serves as the question as to what has really changed between the Zuma era and the Ramaphosa era, in the 2 years of Ramaphosa now. We've got a small soundbite to sort of illustrate that.
amakhwala khuhlindlu
hayabaleka
makhwala.
But the big question which you need to answer today is, how did we get here? Well, when manifestos are anchored in lies and populist rhetoric and deliberately designed to hoodwink people into voting for heaven on earth promises, the result is always chaos.
The ANC government will therefore transform the structure of the economy through industrialization, broad-based black economic empowerment, addressing the basic needs of our people, as well as strengthening and expanding the role of the state.
We want to mobilize more investments into our economy so that both government and business should increase their level of investment in our economy.
The ANC manifesto contains our plans for addressing poverty, unemployment, and inequality. We have therefore put radical economic transformation as the central focus of our plans for the next 5 years.
We have a plan to raise 1.3 trillion rand in a new investments over the next 5 years. We will implement reforms in economic sectors that have greatest potential to grow and create jobs.
Even when I talked to Mr. Zuma, I said that to him, that you know, we shouldn't promise things that cannot be delivered. Like, for instance, when he himself promised that he would create 500,000 jobs, and 1 million jobs were lost.
A promise was made, and rightly or wrong, the students now demand what is due to them. I'm sure the ANC members will remember this poster of theirs, when you promised people free education, and then now you come back and say it's not possible. What was the plan when you mooted this? What are you thinking? Did you think that it would sell? You got the votes, now you can't deliver. So it is on that basis that you need to take ownership of the chaos. You caused it, you promised people lies, you were elected on the basis of lies. What is evident now is that lies and liars don't deliver.
So there was a few bites from Parliament, a few parliamentarians, but also from Jacob Zuma when he was president, and now Ramaphosa when he's president. And leaving personalities aside, they've both been promising the same things, which means nothing has really changed. So as we head into elections next week, let's talk specifically about the governing party. And we can, and we've spoken about education, we've spoken about every single policy leading up to these elections, and here we are. In 10 years, have we got a governing party that is capable of changing South Africa?
Their track record leaves much to be desired. Look, there are sectors where we have changed and we have improved. For instance, the introduction of that program of ARVs. That was very successful. It changed. We've increased the life expectancy, and those things, you need to upload them. You see,
of course.
Whether you agree or disagree about the infrastructure being white elephants, but it was a successful project that of 2010. We built roads, the Gauteng highway and whatnot, but. Now you have, let's talk about Gauteng, where it's hotly contested. The guy who's contesting to be the premier again is the current premier, which is David Makura. Mm-hmm. When he moved from his office of secretary general to run for being premier, he promised the people of Gauteng that he would deal with the ethos.
Of course.
He's campaigning now. He's still promising the same thing.
Same thing.
Nothing has changed. Mm-hmm. So do I believe that he's going to bring change? I don't know.
I think all political parties, not just the ANC, all political parties make promises that they themselves sometimes know they are not going to be able to deliver on. But with the ANC, we can be able to measure and
you know, also criticize because they've been in government, and like Apiwe said, they've done exceptionally well in a lot of things. They haven't done so well in other things, and they have been very corrupt, you know, because people didn't struggle to be poor and whatever, whatever. The one thing that's always gonna set our country back is sometimes not the performance of government, but the ability for all citizens to have equal opportunities. So I think when the ANC finally decides to deal with that elephant of dealing with the legacy of colonialism and apartheid and how it has affected us on race-based issues and how that determines pretty much your whole life if you live in this country, then nothing is ever going to change.
So these are your final thoughts?
Yeah, well, I'll just add on the final point of Zimasa, you know, on what the I believe generally that the ANC has excelled mostly in things that are unsustainable instead of things that would provide a lifetime well-being to individuals, which all we want really as people is equal opportunities, equal economic you know, participation in the wealth of the country, which is not the case so far. Those things are still very much skewed to those who have always been you know, privileged. Once privileged, always privileged has been the order of the day in the past 25 years of ANC rule. And I think they see now that the things in terms of the social welfare, when I say they do things that are unsustainable, yes, they've grown social welfare. We've got 17 million on social grant, but can you really sustain that? And yeah, is social grant itself enough to sustain one in terms of living a decent life? It is not. But in terms of things that will sustain people, which is participation in businesses, people being able to open businesses and succeeding in that, people being able to have decent jobs, that's where the ANC has failed in the main. And I think for them, that has been their Achilles heel. They've been able to do things that are unsustainable, especially social welfare. They've done exceptionally well there, but going forward they really need to look at this. But I don't know, man. They look at the future doesn't look so bright in the hands of the ANC, as far as I'm concerned. But okay, it's not like we have a better alternative anyway.
They created a welfare state, and we deserve better.
When you say equal opportunity, so are you going to vote for the ones of the blue?
No,
South Africa for all.
All right, guys, unfortunately, that is all we have time for this week. Thank you, colleagues, so much for joining me in studio this week. And thank you all so much for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at STPolitics, hashtag STPoliticsWeekly. You can also find our podcast on our Times Live website under the Opinions and Analysis section. Please join us again next week. We're going to come back just a day before elections to give you one last podcast before you have to mark your name down, mark your X down on that
massive one. That's
a massive one. Boom, 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 boom. Catch you guys next week. Have a good one.